Welcome to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was searching for the purpose of her life and the truth that would tie everything together to make sense of what was taught and what was happening on our planet, the fire that was creating all the smoke. Through many experiences, she was finally led to the knowledge book that provided all the answers. Marge is now talking about this gift to humanity on Knowledge Book Radio, so all can be united in peace, love, and harmony. This live call-in show at 1-800-930-2819 is amazing. So get ready to hear about the Knowledge Book. Here's your host, Marge Potasek.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marge Potasek, and you're listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek on Transformation Talk Radio. For the next hour, as we've done before for over a year now, we will continue our series of Omega Talks. And these are actually done at the end of every month. And this is part of the unification program of the Call to Friendship Association mentioned in the Knowledge Book. So in these talks, what we are doing is actually connecting science and spirituality by discussing world knowledge, whatever knowledge that is, and we connect it in some way, shape, or form to the Omega dimension through connecting it to the Knowledge Book. Now, the Omega dimension, those who have been listening before and those who have been reading the Knowledge Book will know that this is the 19th dimension, and this is the dimension that has been closed to humanity for all this time, but has been opened this time to us through the Knowledge Book. And this time, this week, we're going to talk about trees. But before we go on, I would like to give you information, and that is the United States website for the Knowledge Book is www.usa.theknowledgebook, all one word, .net. The Turkish World Brotherhood Union website is www.dkb.davidkiteboy-mevlana.org.tr. My own personal contact information, telephone is 973-787-7035. My email address is mmjp99marymaryjohnpeter99@gmail.com. And the Call to Friendship website is www.calltofriendship.org. So please do email me or text me or call me with any questions that arise from today's topics or from previous shows. And if there is any kind of a topic that you would like me to cover in these Omega Talks, please do let me know. The topics are very welcome. Okay, so thank you very much for any help that you may give me. And let's go on with our talk. So as I mentioned before, this is the Call to Friendship Association World Unification Program Omega Conference Series. And what you're seeing in the upper left-hand corner is the emblem of the Omega Dimension, of the Call to Friendship Association. And what you're seeing is the color of the Omega Dimension is red, black, and white. And of course, our journey begins here. So this is Trees, June 2020. The first slide that you're seeing is basically two intertwined trees. And actually, when I was in England back in 2008, someone took me, I was in Glastonbury, someone took me to visit and meet two trees. The trees were called Gog and Magog. One was male, one was female. The person couldn't tell who was which. However, at that time, one of the trees had died. One was alive, the other one had died. And since then, I guess the other tree was missing the first tree. They've been together for hundreds of years. It was a huge, huge tree. Both trees are huge trees and very impressive, very awe-inspiring. So I went to meet them and eventually the other tree died. So right now neither tree is alive, which is very sad, but it was very happy that I was able to at least meet one of them. So trees are very special beings, very special creations, and humans have been actually benefiting in many ways from the trees. So when it's a hot day, we actually run for the cool shade of a tree. If you're in a parking lot, we know what the difference is between parking your car under the shade of a tree and parking the car in full sunlight. It's much more pleasant to get into the car when you're actually under the tree. Otherwise, the car gets very, very, very hot. Also, when we get caught in the rain, we go running under the tree again for protection. But we also have to be careful that we don't run under the tree that's the tallest one in that particular area, because they, of course, do attract lightning from the sky if this is an electrical storm. I guess the best type of fruit to eat is the fruit that you've just picked from an apple tree, from a pear tree, from a plum tree, from an orange tree, from a lemon tree, from a mango tree, whatever tree that you've actually been able to grow. And the tree produced fruit, that's the juiciest tree fruit, that's the best fruit to eat. Now, of course, we can all remember swinging maybe from a rubber tire hung from a branch of a tree, or romp in the park or in backyard in the leaves that the tree drops during the winter and during the fall. And of course, we all enjoyed social occasions while we're grouped around campfires. And we, of course, sometimes are able to enjoy a cup of hot chocolate in front of a fireplace on cold winter nights. Now, these are some of the experiences that we have with trees, but have we ever actually thought about trees? What is their side of the story? And what is our relationship to them? So how do trees benefit us? And even though we see the canopy, we see the trunk above ground, I was told that as big as the canopy, as big as a tree is above ground, that's as big and that's as deep and that's as wide the roots are below ground. So it goes on down there. What is happening down there with the roots? And when we're trying to plant something under the cover of trees, we know how many roots we encounter because they're all intertwined, all intertangled, and it's very hard to get and plant any plants underneath trees. And do trees actually interact with each other? We talk, we see animals talk to each other, we see people talking to each other. There are means of communication that every species has. So do trees actually also communicate? So one of the first benefits that we talk about as far as trees are concerned is that they actually mediate our climate. Trees can cool a city by up to 10 degrees Fahrenheit by shading our homes and streets and releasing water vapor into the air through their leaves. They also reduce heat loss at night. So when I was passing through a town once upon a time, that city or that town had maybe 80% tree cover. And in that city, when you were driving towards that city from the highway, you could feel the temperature dropping. You could feel the air changing. The air was much easier to breathe. It was cleaner, it was fresher, and it was much cooler. And in fact, the people in the town didn't need air conditioning. Air conditioning was not necessary because they had a tree cover. However, recently, or actually over the past 20 years or so, because of storm damage, because of the trees were getting older and therefore more brittle because they weren't taken care of properly. So you've got to remember that trees, especially oak trees and maple trees and all the trees, actually like acid soil. So when we are actually fertilizing our grass, grass likes sweet soil. So when we're fertilizing the grass, we're actually killing the trees because we are changing the composition of the soil on which the tree is growing. So therefore we are weakening the trees and therefore they will start dropping branches, they will get sick and they will die. So right now that town has maybe is down to 60% of the trees that it had before. It lost quite a lot of trees. And right now everybody needs air conditioning. Everybody is in the same temperature as all the surrounding cities, right? That was not the case before. So trees also protect us from storm damage. Even we think that the trees could drop their branches, however, the tree is healthy. If the tree is strong, that will not happen. The trees manage stormwater by retaining rain in their leaves, in their root systems, and in their trunks. This prevents flooding. The fewer trees we have, the more expensive infrastructure, the more drainage we need, public drainage, public sewer system that we need to be able to take the overflow of water that comes down. The trees also break the force of the wind and take the wind above our houses as opposed to hitting our houses directly. And they also, through their roots, by holding onto the soil with their roots, they're actually preventing soil erosion. Now, I lived in a house. The house was in an area where it used to be, there used to be a lake in the back of the house, and that lake was filled in. So when it rained, when it really, really rained hard, I would be downstairs in the basement mopping up water because the water would be seeping into the basement. So then I thought, I found out somewhere that trees retain water. So I planted trees around the property. And when I planted those trees, even though it rained hard, even though it would have produced water in my basement, it no longer produced water in my basement when the trees were standing and the trees were alive. So if you have a flooding problem, if you have it all possible, please do plant trees. Now, of course, if we have trees, like I mentioned before, we are using less air conditioning, and it, of course, it reduces heat, and it also reduces the CO2 emissions. So if your trees basically take up the carbon dioxide that's produced by burning fossil fuels, by doing whatever it is that we do, and therefore it is utilizing those waste products and is producing us and giving us fresh air. So air conditioning needs can be down by 30%, and we can save 20 to 50% in energy use for heating because of it. And of course, trees serve as habitat for animals and plants. So small animals and insects live in our trees, while larger animals need extensive forested land to satisfy their range needs. And both native and migratory birds find refuge and raise their offspring in our trees every year. There are many, many beautiful native understory plants that live below the canopy of our large shade trees. So not every plant can tolerate full sun exposure from sunup to sundown. In fact, their leaves would burn, they would not produce flowers. So as long as there are shade trees above, then those plants, those flowers can bloom, they can grow, and they can remain healthy and keep growing. Now, of course, trees absorb carbon dioxide and they release oxygen. We release carbon dioxide and take in oxygen. So when you're thinking about a tree during the course of a year, a mature tree will absorb more than 48 pounds of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And there are studies that have been made that actually show that global forests removed about one third of fossil fuel emissions between the years 1990 and 2007. And forested watersheds also provide quality drinking water for more than 180 million Americans. So when you have a healthy tree environment with a forest or whatever, then the water that drops up down from the sky that may contain pollutants, because every droplet of water is formed around a piece of something, whether that's a piece of rubber tire or part of the jet fuel coming out of the plane, it forms, that water droplet forms about around something that's possibly toxic. So when the water goes through the tree roots, when it goes through the dirt, it gets cleaned out. It's like a gigantic water filter. And by the time we get the water that's in our water table, we get pure drinking water that's been purified by the trees and by the watershed. And of course, trees contribute to our economy. Whenever you see a town that has lots of trees, that's the town that actually retains their property values. They have made many, many studies, and those studies show that properties with trees in or near them have a higher selling price and are on the market for a lot less time. And of course, they provide income for businesses by attracting visitors and residents. So how many of us, when it comes to the turning from summer into fall, travel to the northern part of our country to be able to see the leaves turning? So sometimes we would travel 5 hours, 6 hours, sometimes even 7 hours to go and see the leaves fall. And of course, the businesses who are in that area benefit from the fact that we need to be able to drink something, eat something, stop by and enjoy the scenery. And of course, trees make us healthy. Again, studies have shown that the trees make a difference in promoting healing and wellness. And actually, we get to be more psychologically well, and it reduces crime as well. When you go into a forest, when you go into a park and see the trees and be among the trees, somehow you feel better. Somehow those trees enable you to feel better about yourself, to be able to feel better about the people around you, and things go better when there are more trees. And of course, trees create a beautiful environment, whether it's in the fall or in the spring or in the summer or even in the winter, especially with snow on the branches. So we get a lot of aesthetic pleasure from having trees around us. And of course, this kind of aesthetic pleasure, either leaves turning in the fall to all those beautiful orange and red and yellow colors, or in the spring when they are in full bloom. So we enjoy this, and that kind of a situation, that kind of an environment attracts tourists, attracts artists, retirees, and people who like to go hiking, like to go walking, like to be able to motorbike or to do dirt biking on mountains and trails. So we've kind of covered how the trees benefit us, so how we benefit from trees. But then the question arises, what's going on underfoot? What is going on under there? And what studies have shown is that trees respond to and interact with, they communicate, protect, and nourish other trees, even those not of their own species. Scientific studies discovered that this communication takes place underground. So there are two people that are very instrumental, who have done experiments, who have done studies, who have worked with trees over time. And one person is Suzanne Simard, and she's a professor of forest ecology and teaches at the University of British Columbia. The other individual is Peter Wohlhilben, and he's a German forester and author who writes on ecological themes. So she approaches things from a logical, scientific view, and Peter Wohlhilben basically talks about trees in a more romantic way, in a way that maybe lets us connect with the trees and understand trees better. So both of these scientists were instrumental in doing the research to discover that trees do in fact communicate through an underground network. And what we'll do is explore some of this information to understand more about how trees communicate. So, ecologist Suzanne Simard has shown how trees use a network of soil fungi to communicate their needs and aid neighboring plants. Now she's warning that threats like clear cutting and climate change could disrupt these critical networks. So there's an article that was written by Diane Toomey in September of 2016, in which it states, two decades ago, whilst researching for her doctoral thesis, ecologist Suzanne Simard discovered that trees communicate their needs and send each other nutrients via a network of latticed fungi buried in the soil. In other words, she found they talk to each other. Since then, Simard, now at the University of British Columbia, has pioneered further research into how trees converse, including how these fungal filigrees help trees send warning signals about environmental change, search for kin, and transfer their nutrients to neighboring plants before they die. So, according to her, a forest is a cooperative system. It is not individual trees standing side by side unknowing and ignoring each other. And she basically explained in an interview with the magazine Yale Environment 360, quote, "To me, using the language of communication made more sense because we were looking at not just resource transfers, but things like defense signaling and kin recognition signaling. We as human beings can relate to this better. If we can relate to it, then we're going to care about it more. And if we care about it more, then we're going to do a better job of stewarding our landscapes." So, of course, the more the knowledge we have, the more understanding we have, then, of course, we're better equipped and better tooled to be able to progress in a healthier and safer way. So she also explored how and why trees talk to each other. So she explained also in the interview, "All trees all over the world, including paper birch and Douglas fir, form a symbiotic association with below ground fungi. These fungi are beneficial to the plants through this association. Now, the fungus cannot photosynthesize. It cannot use sunlight. It doesn't have chlorophyll. It does not have the ability to take sunlight, combine it with water in the presence of chlorophyll to produce sugars that actually help people through the food that they eat, and they're able to then, so the fungi depend on the trees to photosynthesize and produce sugars, while the fungi, basically, they're the ones that pick up nutrients and water, and especially the nutrients of phosphorus and nitrogen, and bring it to the roots of the trees. So the fungi produces and gives the elements, the bits of matter that the tree needs to grow and photosynthesize, and the tree, having the benefit of receiving those nutrients and water, basically uses that to produce sugars, and that sugar is then shared with the mushroom, with the fungi, and both are basically allowing each other to live and to be able to progress. So in essence, the plant is fixing carbon and then trading it for the nutrients that it needs for its metabolism. It's actually a very beneficial relationship for the both of them. So neither one will be able to survive without the other. So this is a network. This is kind of like a below ground pipeline that connects one tree root system to another tree root system so that nutrients and carbon and water can be exchanged between the trees. So in a natural forest of British Columbia, paper birch and Douglas fir grow together in early successional forest communities. They compete with each other, but our work shows that they also cooperate with each other by sending nutrients and carbon back and forth through their mycorrhizal networks, through the mycelia, or the connecting links or filigrees of fungal or of the fungi. So Simard actually explained that they've done a number of experiments where they were trying to figure out what drives the exchange. Why are the trees and the fungi, the mushrooms, in a symbiotic relationship? So this is a back and forth exchange. We need to keep this in mind. So sometimes the birch will get more, and sometimes the fir will get more. The fir tree will get more. And it depends on the ecology that's going on at that time. So one of the things that they tested, and it was an important thing that they tested, and that was about shading. In other words, one tree is bigger or has leaves at one particular point in time, and it shades another tree. So the more Douglas fir became shaded by in the summertime, the more excess carbon the birch had went to the fir. So when the birch was full of leaves and therefore shading the fir was not able to get the sunlight and be able to photosynthesize. At that time, the birch would actually feed the fir. And later in the fall, when the birch was actually losing its leaves and was going to sleep, the fir then had excess carbon because it was still photosynthesizing in the winter sun, and therefore it was giving the carbon back to the birch. So these trees are cooperating with each other, and they're sharing the surplus. They were sharing whatever they had more of during the time of the summer. So it goes from the birch to the fir, and the other way around in the winter, from the fir to the birch, when the fir was actually photosynthesizing. But there are also fungal factors involved. So a fungus that is linking the network is going to be looking to secure its carbon sources. Even though we don't understand a whole lot about that, it makes sense from an evolutionary point of view. The fungus is in it for its own livelihood to make sure that it's got a secure food base in the future. So it will help direct that carbon transfer to the different plants. So there was, Simard further explained that Kevin Beeler, who was a PhD student, did really elegant work where he used DNA analysis to look at the short sequence of DNA in trees and fungal individuals in patches of Douglas fir forest. His work basically enabled the creation of a map of the network of two related sister species of mycorrhizal fungi and how they link Douglas fir trees in that forest. And just by creating that map, he was able to show that all of the trees, essentially, with a few isolated exceptions, were linked together. He found that the biggest, oldest trees in the network were the most highly linked, whereas smaller trees were not linked to as many other trees. Big old trees have got bigger root systems and associate with bigger mycorrhizal networks, and they've got more carbon that's flowing into the network. And they've also got more root tips. So it makes sense that they would have more connections to other trees all around them. In later experiments, they've been pursuing whether these older trees can recognize kin, whether the seedlings that are regenerating around them are of the same kin, whether they're offspring or not, and whether they can favor those seedlings. And we found that they can. So in other words, that's how they came up with the term mother tree, because they're the biggest, oldest trees, and we know that they can nurture their own kin. They can recognize their own kin, and they can nurture their own kin. So according to Suzanne Simard, mother trees are the largest trees in the forest that act as a central hub for vast below-ground mycorrhizal networks. A mother tree supports seedlings by infecting them with fungi and supplying them the nutrients they need to grow. She discovered that Douglas firs provide carbon to baby firs. She found that there was more carbon sent to the baby firs that came from that specific mother tree than random baby firs not related to that specific fir tree. It was also found that mother trees changed their root structure to make room for baby trees. So they did this experiment in the greenhouse. They wanted to see whether trees and why trees talk to each other and how they talk to each other when a tree is dying. And they did this in the greenhouse. So what they did is they grew seedlings of Douglas fir with ponderosa pine. And they injured one that would have been acting as the mother tree, which of course was the older fir seedling. And they use the ponderosa pine because it's a lower elevation species that is expected to start replacing Douglas fir as climates change. And she wanted to know whether or not there was any kind of transfer of the legacy of the old forest to the new forest that is going to be migrating upward and northward as climate changes. So when they injured those Douglas fir trees, they found a couple of things happened. One is that the Douglas fir dumped its carbon into the network and it was taken up by the ponderosa pine. Secondly, the defense enzymes of the Douglas fir and the ponderosa pine were upregulated in response to this injury. What they interpreted this to mean is that this was a defense signaling going on through the network of trees. Those two responses, both the carbon transfer and the defense signal, only happened when there was a mycorrhizal network intact. When they severed the network, it didn't happen. So this basically proved that it is the network of fungi that connects these trees, that is the fungi that actually allows the trees to communicate and exchange carbon with each other. So how they interpreted it is that the native species was being replaced by a new species as climate changes, is sending carbon and warning signals to the neighboring seedling to give them a head start as they assume the more dominant role in the ecosystem. Now, we're going to talk about what they call the wood wide web, how the trees talk to each other through the wood wide web. And this was done from an article by Fino Menenzies. So if we imagine an information superhighway that speeds up interactions between a large, diverse population of individuals, allowing individuals who may be widely separated to communicate and help each other out, and this, of course, is what we do on a daily basis right now through the internet, through the World Wide Web. However, when we walk in the woods, this is all happening beneath our feet. And we're not talking about the internet, we're talking about fungi. As a result of a growing body of evidence, many biologists have started using the term Wood Wide Web to describe the communication services that fungi provide to plants and other organisms. So we have a World Wide Web and we have a Wood Wide Web. And the Wood Wide Web basically is a method for trees all over the world to communicate with each other, because eventually, if allowed to grow, then all the trees are actually interconnected. So all the trees all over the world form a symbiotic association with below ground fungi. And these are the fungi that are beneficial to the plants and explore the soil. The fungi send mycelium, this is a mass of thin threads, through the soil. The mycelium picks up nutrients and water, brings them back to the plant, and exchanges the nutrients and water for a sugar or other substance made by photosynthesis from the plant. So this is, of course, a win-win, mutually beneficial exchange. And again, Suzanne Simard, the ecologist, discovered that trees communicate their needs and send each other nutrients via a network of lattice fungi buried in the soil. In other words, she found they talk to each other, they communicate with each other. So while mushrooms, the ones that we pick in the forest or the ones that we get in the store, they're the ones that we're the most familiar with as being part of a fungus. However, that's just the fruiting body. That's just the sexual form of the plant. Most of the fungal bodies are made up of mycelium. And these are like threads that act as a kind of underground internet, now being referred to as the Wood Wide Web. And these are the threads that link the roots of different plants and different species. If you've ever dug into the soil, you may have noticed these white threads that are in there, and these would be part of the fungus, part of the fungi that are actually connecting plants and plant root systems. And by linking to the fungal network, they can help out their neighbors by sharing nutrients and information, or by sabotaging unwelcome plants by spreading toxic chemicals through the network. So trees and plants have a protective mechanism, protective enzymes, protective molecules that basically stop other plants from growing. I know that oak trees will not let seedlings, in other words, if you plant an acorn, if you plant any seeds under an oak, they will not sprout, they will not become new plants, because the oak tree issues out chemicals that stop the growth. And the fungal networks also boost their host plant's immune system. By simply plugging into the mycelial networks, the plants are more resistant to disease. Well, of course, I mean, if you get all the nutrients that you need from the fungi, then of course you'll be healthier and you'll be able to grow and to survive. And this is an important point. Trees and forests are not really individuals. The large trees that are out there actually help out the smaller and the younger ones using this mycelial fungal internet network. And without this help, Simard thinks that many seedlings wouldn't survive. She found that seedlings in the shade, which are likely to be short of food, receive carbon from other trees. So if you've ever wondered how the smaller bushes, smaller trees, and the undergrowth of a forest actually are able to survive with so little sunlight is because the older trees, the bigger trees, are actually supplying them with nutrients. And if we go now into another viewpoint, and this comes from an article by Richard Grant, which appeared in the Smithsonian Magazine, March of 2018, this talks about a German forester. And this gentleman was walking in the Eifel Mountains in Western Germany through what he called a cathedral-like groves of oak and beech. And he found that there was a strange, unmoored feeling of entering a fairy tale. The trees were vibrantly alive and charged with wonder, and they were communicating with one another as the beginning of this whole thing. So the trees are involved in tremendous struggles of and death-defying dramas. To reach enormousness, they depend on a complicated web of relationships, alliances, and kinship networks. So this is a more romantic view, a non-scientific view, but maybe based in science, of this particular German gentleman. So again, the article continues that wise old mother trees feed their saplings with liquid sugar and warn the neighbors when danger approaches. And reckless youngsters take foolhardy risks with leaf shedding, light chasing, and excessive drinking, and usually pay with their lives. Crown princes wait for the old monarchs to fall so they can take their place in a full glory of sunlight. It's all happening in the ultra slow motion that is tree time, so that what we see is a freeze frame of the action. So Peter Wohlleben, a German forester and author, has a rare understanding of the inner life of trees and is able to describe it in accessible, evocative language. So this is not imaginary. This is not metaphorical language that he uses. This is something that he believes in. So I believe he, this is my own particular perspective, just like we have horse whisperers and cat whisperers and dog whisperers, he may be a tree whisperer. So he's now 53 and has become a publishing sensation. He published the book, The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, written at his wife's insistence. And that book has sold more than 800,000 copies in Germany and now has hit the bestseller list in 11 other countries, including the United States and Canada. So Wohlleben sees a forest as a superorganism of unique individuals, a combined community. A single beech tree can live for 400 years and produce 1.8 million beech nuts. Trees are far more alert, social, sophisticated, and even intelligent than we thought. So he sees something from a completely different perspective. So since the time of Darwin, we have generally thought of trees as striving, disconnected loners competing for water, nutrients, and sunlight, with the winners shading out the losers and sucking them dry. The timber industry in particular sees forests as wood-producing systems and battlegrounds for survival of the fittest. However, there is now a substantial body of scientific evidence that refutes this idea. It shows instead, and to the contrary, that trees of the same species are communal and will often form alliances with trees of other species. Forest trees have evolved to live in cooperative, interdependent relationships maintained by communication and a collective intelligence similar to an insect colony. These soaring columns of living wood draw the eye upward to their outspreading crowns, but the real action is taking place underground, just a few inches below our feet. Some are calling it the wood wide web, says Wohlleben, in German accented English. All the trees here and in every forest that is not too damaged are connected to each other through underground fungal networks. Trees share water and nutrients through the networks and also use them to communicate. They send distress signals about drought and disease, for example, or insect attacks, and other trees alter their behavior when they receive these messages. So this is actually a form of well-intended communications. So what the scientists call these networks are mycorrhizal networks. And the fine hair-like root tips of trees join together with microscopic fungal filaments to form the basic links of the network, which appears to operate as a symbiotic relationship between the trees and fungi, or perhaps an economic exchange. As a kind of fee for services, the fungi consume about 30% of the sugar that the trees photosynthesize from sunlight. And sugar is what actually feeds the fungi, as they scavenge the soil for nitrogen, phosphorus, and other mineral nutrients, which are then absorbed and consumed by the trees. So without the fungi, the trees would not be able to absorb and actually get their roots on essential nutrients that they need. Now, this German gentleman came across a gigantic beech stump in the forest, 4 or 5 feet across. The tree was felled maybe 400 or 500 years ago, but when he scraped away the surface with his penknife, Wolf Welland found something astonishing. The stump was still green with chlorophyll. There was only one explanation for this, and the surrounding beeches were keeping it alive by pumping sugar to it through the network. When beeches do this, they remind me of elephants, he says. They are reluctant to abandon their dead, especially when it gets to be a big, old, revered matriarch. So, Wolf Welland, in his writing, of course, he's going to be more romantic, more prone to figurative language, because he cannot be boring. So he uses emotional storytelling techniques. So his trees cry with thirst, they panic and gamble and mourn, they talk, suckle, and make mischief. If these words were framed in quotation marks, that they were metaphorical, then maybe we would understand. However, it seems that he actually believes that this is actually what is happening. And that's it. So this is not a metaphor for him. It is what is actually happening in the forest and how things are going on. And he says that when a huge matriarch, a big tree, dies, then, of course, it falls to the ground. And then the trees, who were the crown princes, here are the ones who are waiting for the monarch to go away, for them to take power, for them to take over. They breathe a sigh of relief. So does he think that trees have consciousness? Well, he responds that he doesn't think that trees have a conscious life, but we really can't tell, we really don't know. We must at least talk about the rights of trees. We must manage our forests sustainably and respectfully and allow some trees to grow old with dignity and to die a natural death. In rejecting the confines of the careful technical language of science, he has succeeded more than anyone in conveying the lives of these mysterious gigantic beings and in becoming their spokesman. So he's the speaker for the trees. As we have seen in this research, all things are connected and subtle communication and energy is exchanged between everything. As stated in the knowledge book on page 639, quote, by the evolutionary progresses of the dimensions they are in, these energy evolutions had formed later the forms of stone, earth, sand, fire, water, plant, animal, and by following an energy form that could reach the final evolutionary boundary, they had reached a scale. And again, in the knowledge book on page 801, quote, in accordance with the ordinance of existence, each existing and totality, including the entire creation, forms a magnetic scale according to its own totality. For example, there are magnetic fields of plants, trees, flowers, wolves, birds, stone, soil, in short, of everything carrying energy, formed in accordance with its own frequency powers. So every form of life and every form that isn't still alive still has its own particular magnetic field, has its own particular frequency, has its own particular dimension. Again, on page 724, the knowledge book states, quote, even a tree that has become furniture dreams remembering its former lives. Trees that grew next to each other and that look that took the form of any object by a different formation can talk to each other in their own magnetic dimensions in the world. So the question of whether trees have consciousness of not or not actually answered in the knowledge book, because it says that the tree, even when it is dead, even when it becomes a piece of furniture, can communicate with another piece of furniture in another part of the world through dreams and through some kind of communication. So even what we consider to be inanimate objects can communicate within their own magnetic field and can easily absorb the energies within that field. And eventually humans will be able to produce technology fine enough to be able to discern this and sensitive enough to be able to discern this communication. So there is communication, there is consciousness in forms that we have never thought about before, that maybe the desk that we're sitting on has its own particular level of consciousness, its own particular level of a magnetic field, and they're able then to communicate with their own particular kind of magnetic field entities. And that sometimes makes me wonder, because sometimes when you talk to people or when people talk to you, you can easily understand them or you can't understand them at all. So it's as if there's some kind of a barrier, something that stops us from being able to understand each other. And right now reading this, it makes me wonder whether we're in a different dimension and therefore we're not able to understand each other because we're talking a different language. I will be talking a language of my own dimension, and that individual will be talking in a language of their own dimension. They will be able to understand anyone in their own dimension. I will be able to understand anyone in my own dimension. But until the two of us or many of us who are able, who cannot understand each other now, when we're actually able to be at the same dimension, we will be able to understand and communicate with each other well. So again, on page 724, quote, in science and learning, first one begins with theories. Later, he attains the whole. Still later, the truth. Evolution scales of a human too follow the same systematic tableau. Every word said on your planet until today is correct. There is no such thing as incorrect. However, since every individual talks and gives knowledge from his or her own dimension, frequency, and since the consciousnesses of the other dimensions lack the consciousness and the knowledge of that dimension, they cannot grasp the meaning of the spoken words. This reminds me of, let's say you're studying algebra, you're studying math. Now, anyone who's can only add, subtract, multiply, and divide will not be able to do integrals, they will not be able to do sums, they will not be able to do the higher level calculus. Different dimensions, different knowledge in each of these dimensions. So the person who can understand addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division will not be able to do calculus, will not be able to understand calculus. So someone speaking in calculus terms or professor teaching calculus, those words will go right over the individual who can only add, subtract, multiply, and divide. So this is like a crude analogy of the different kinds of knowledge, different kinds of magnetic fields each dimension has, and how we are able or aren't able to communicate between dimensions because of the lack of the knowledge, or maybe lack of knowledge and being in a different magnetic field. So as conclusion, in essence, everything in the same magnetic field, same energy, same frequency, same knowledge, same consciousness, same evolution level, can easily communicate with each other, can easily understand each other, and easily accept each other. And we've seen through the research done about trees, how beautifully trees live with each other, protect and nurture each other, and how they cooperate even with trees not genetically related to them. So a fir and a birch are different species. They're different genetically. They are not related. I mean, they're trees, but they're not genetically immediately related. One is not an offspring to another. In other words, if a birch tree drops a seed, it will not become a fir tree, and the other way around. And a fir tree drops a seed, it will not become a birch tree, because they are genetically disconnected. However, those trees, as we've seen through the research being done, those trees are able to communicate and cooperate, so that when one tree has excess carbon, excess sugars, they're able to then to share that with those trees who are lacking it at that moment because they cannot photosynthesize in the case of firs, because they have still, actually the birches have leaves while the firs are being shaded in the summer. So they share their products that they produce through photosynthesis. They share it with the firs, and the other way around in the winter, those firs who now have access to sunlight and the birches have lost their leaves, which means they cannot photosynthesize at all. Now the firs can feed the birches. So back and forth, it's a mutual communication, it's a mutual symbiotic relationship. And this is all being mediated by those tiny little filaments of fungi. So those of us who don't like mushrooms and don't appreciate mushrooms, maybe this will give us a different inkling of what mushrooms do, how they do it, and how beneficial they are to everything. So how do we get to where we need to get to? How are we going to be able, or when are we going to be able to actually communicate with each other? And how do we become a community, of human community, where we are mutually supportive, we are mutually feeding, we are mutually cooperating with each other? So in order for humanity to arrive at the community that trees have accomplished, humans need to achieve the magnetic field of Mevlana. And this is a Mevlana consciousness. And the Mevlana consciousness, and this is the measuring stick that is going to be used, that is being used to measure us, measure our evolution. We need to be at the level of infinite tolerance, infinite love, and infinite humility. So these are the three comes that Mevlana said from his essence heart. And this is where we need to be. How do we get there? How do we accomplish this? Well, the knowledge book is here for this very purpose. The knowledge book has the knowledge, has the energy, has the frequency, has the ability to basically gauge us, to read us as we're reading it, it's reading us, and be able to assign those tasks, assign those experiences that we need and for us to be able to evolve. It is able to give us those energies, those frequencies, that knowledge, and allows us to arrive at that consciousness that slowly, step by step, little by little, one step at a time, we're able to get to the point where we are tolerant of everyone, that we have infinite love for everyone, including a grain of sand. But at the same time, not be too proud of ourselves, and we have minimum or no ego at all. So this is the progress that we're supposed to be undergoing. This is the progress that we're going through. And this is how we are able to accomplish this. And eventually, we will be able to be like the trees, to be able to be this community of interdependent, loving, accepting, tolerant, patient, cooperating, collaborating, mass of humanity that is able to communicate with and understand each other. And this has been our talk for this month. Please do text me and email me with any questions that arise from today's topic, or if you have a different idea from this, maybe we can talk about it. And please do send me any topics or questions for future shows, as that is very welcome. So again, the Knowledge Book website is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. The Turkish World Brotherhood Union website is www.dkbdavidkiteboy-mevlana.org.tr. My contact information is telephone 973-787-7035. And my email address is mmjp99@gmail.com. That's marymaryjohnpeter99@gmail.com. The Call to Friendship Association, of which this talk is a part, their website is www.calltofriendship.org. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Please do keep those questions and topics coming, and we'll see you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek. Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity, and its time of transition to the Golden Age that provided the truth and energies and frequencies. Now, she shares information from and answers questions about the Knowledge Book with you each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit Marge at usa.theknowledgebook.net.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.